Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for the host of the Endurance Diaries podcast, Miss Ashley Yashevich. Ashley, welcome.
Thanks, Eric. It's so great to be here.
So how did I do with the last name?
Perfect.
Okay, see. I'll give myself a tiny pat on the back for that one.
You should.
So, Ashley, I know your podcast shares some of the same ethos that ours does in that you like to have people on that can tell their story, empower other people. I know that we're on the same tip with a lot of these things, so I'm very grateful to have a like-minded person in here kind of on a different side of the coin. But I know that your journey kind of started with athletics and things like that and you learning to empower yourself first. So kind of press rewind for me a little bit and take me to where your life starts to have this forward momentum that you're riding and then in turn sharing eventually.
Yeah, definitely. Well, first of all, thank you again for having me here and in what you shared about the podcast. And it's true. It's really similar in terms of, you know, what we do in the space that we create. So it's really an honor to be here with you and share this space. So thank you.
Thank you.
But yeah, I appreciate the question and really where my the inspiration, you know, behind launching the podcast came a lot from my own story and just this desire internally to share it because I believe that, you know, we're not alone in the things that we go through. Mm-hmm. And I know from an athlete perspective and what I experienced, you know, growing up and wanting to play in college and having this big dream that to me didn't get realized, I know there's a lot of others, you know, on similar journeys in different ways who have gone through, you know, challenges in their own life, whether in athletics or other areas of life, that we could really come into the space and share that and help one another and empower one another. So for myself, you know, I grew up a multi-sport athlete with a focus on basketball. And I had a really big dream of going and playing Division I and getting a scholarship and then really going beyond that and playing professionally overseas or something here. It's like the little girl inside you that's like, I'm going to go do this.
And, yes.
You know, I'm not thinking about anything else, you know.
And how old were you when that started?
That was honestly around like second, third grade.
Okay.
When I started to play on a team. You know, when I was 6 or 7 years old, that's when I was, you know, picking up different sports and just playing for fun. But it was really second, third grade going into, you know, those those years that I was playing team sports and really just loved, you know, loved being out there and loved playing. And as I got a bit older into middle school, going into, you know, then going into high school, I was playing competitively on travel teams, you know, and I was traveling all throughout the country.
Awesome.
So that was, you know, it was a really big experience for me and something that, you know, just grew that desire and love in my heart for the game. And it also became really competitive because when we got into, you know, getting into high school and having this desire to go and play, you know, at the next level, you know, you're going to these tournaments and all these coaches are there watching you and you're playing with girls that are really elite level that you know are going to go on, you know, and be really successful in the sport. So all of that to say, I was one of those girls and I was like, I'm right here. I'm elite. You know, you have this confidence and you're playing and you're going to these, you know, high level events and tournaments and all eyes are on you.
Right.
And it builds a lot of pressure. So, you know, you go and you're playing and you have this dream. But then in a lot of ways, you are seeing your teammates and your friends who also have the same dream. And so you love them and they become like your best friends. And also it's like you're competing for time. You're competing for, you know, roster spots. You're competing, you know, ultimately to go and play at that next level.
Right.
So, yeah, all of that to say, I mean, that in and of itself was a whole journey. And
so what were some of the feelings that you were having towards a game that and athletics and competition that you really loved as it started to be more high stakes competitive? Did that throw you or did that something excite you when it first started happening?
A little bit of both. I think, you know, it's exciting because there's a huge opportunity in front of you.
Mm.
And that's something that you, you know, you see and each and every one of us has our own reason as to why we want to go play at the next level, you know, and also earning that scholarship and doing something for yourself where you're like, I did this, you know, like I'm earning this. And that's a big, you know, for me, it's like I want to be able to do that and know that, hey, I'm in here, I'm working hard, I sacrificed a lot to be here, and I'm going to go get it. And I know what's at stake, and it's going to be mine. And that's just that competitive nature and mentality that you have. And it didn't happen for me. It didn't happen in the way that I thought it would. And when I say that, you know, to kind of bypass all the years in between, what ultimately happened was that I didn't receive the scholarship offers that I thought I was going to get, that I was working hard to get, that my friends and my teammates were getting. It wasn't happening to me. I was doing everything I could. My game was there. I was competing. I was playing at that level, and it didn't happen for me. And then you're sitting with this question of, well, do you want to keep playing at that next level and basically, you know, not get a scholarship and play at a smaller school for the love of the game, or now,
whatever opportunity you could manifest.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, and that's hard on the ego,
right?
You know, because you're seeing everyone else, you know, being able to realize their dream and it's not happening. And you think you have all these thoughts of like, I sacrificed, you know, so much. You know, there's so much that you sacrifice, especially as a young person.
Exactly. And that's what I was thinking. Does it hit you at that point, or, you know, where you're reassessing all of this effort you've made?
Yes. Yeah. And you think, what was all that for? And those are thoughts that I have battled then and that have resurfaced. I'm sure we'll get into it, you know, as we talk more here. But, you know, when you go after something and you have a goal and you don't achieve that goal, then what? You know, you're labeling yourself as a failure.
Right. You just said the magic word there.
Yeah.
So what's the frame that gets put in? What are your feelings towards failure, since you said it? I mean, because some people like to have the mentality that there is no failing. It's only first attempt, second attempt. But
totally. That
usually comes after you have one of those, oh my God, I'm a failure moments.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, yeah, it's how you frame it in the meaning that you attach to it. Because if you ask me now in the present day, I would have the same, you know, kind of response there. Is like, hey, no, there's no failing. There's only learning,
right?
There's only opportunity. There's only possibilities. There's, you know, what if the goal isn't the goal?
Ah.
That's not something that I came up with. That's a mentor and coach of mine who, you know, has worked with me through some of these thoughts. And that's something that we worked on to reframe. What if the goal isn't the goal? What if there's something, you know, far beyond that you can discover if we just choose to go there? And that's
right.
Internal. So a lot of unlearning and relearning kind of those thoughts as a competitor, because, you know, when you're going after something, no, you're going to get it. So, yeah, to go back to, you know, this, hey, I'm a failure now. What is all of this for? You know, I ended up going to a smaller school and I did play for 2 years. And it was during that time that everything came to the surface for me of these deep questions like, no, what are you really doing this for? You know, and you have to think about it. Then you have to dig into yourself and realize, like, you know, what was all of this about? You know, was it about, you know, the love of the game and you wanting to go to the highest level because you're all in it? Was it about, you know, the need to feel like you're good enough at something?
That's what it is for a lot of people.
Yes.
Then there's the whole sidebar of you versus you.
Yeah.
How much of that did you feel?
That's a great, you know, I like that, because I think oftentimes it is ourselves that hold us back from things.
Right.
You know? And even we create these limitations. And I would love to dive into this later as well. But I think, you know, it's yourself that can, you know, be the greatest obstacle, you know, when you think, hey, 100. this is what I want, or this is, you know, what I'm going to do, or I am only good if I reach this, you know, this level. Well, what happens when you don't? Then who are you?
Right. Well, that I guess that begs the question, whilst you're making any of this progress that you've made, regardless if it's in a competitive nature with an outside force or yourself, how do you gauge that? How do you gauge, am I doing this for a reason that benefits me, or am I just going through the motions?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for me and my experience in unpacking that is really a lot of, as cliche as it may sound, but it's true. I think it's a lot of that self-reflection and asking yourself questions. You know, it's by, I think even just sitting here, you know, with you and understanding your style of, you know, interviewing and podcasting, I love that because I think it's by the questions that we ask that we truly, you know, can understand one another.
Amen.
And when we understand one another more, it drops those, you know, it drops the limitations, it drops the judgments that we put on one another.
Well, we're in judgment-free zone here.
Yeah. So it's like, what are the questions that we're asking ourselves, you know?
Right.
And when you ask yourself those questions, you're like, I don't even know how to answer this. And then you start doing that work and that digging and writing things out, and you reveal, things are revealed to you that you're like, oh, well, maybe this is actually it here. Maybe I'm doing this because I had a limiting belief about myself when I was younger.
Right.
And I was trying to, you know, mask this, or I was trying to, you know, this was my outlet for this other thing that was happening. And you just do all this kind of unpacking and realize what's really underneath there.
Yeah, right. And that's such a powerful thing. And that's kind of a weird endeavor for a person to take on in and of itself.
So, it is.
So talk to me about when you start to take the lid off of self-examination like that. Because when, especially when you've got a background in athletics, it's really easy to take self-examination and turn it into being your own biggest critic, which I personally think is not the greatest thing we do for ourselves.
No, it's not.
So how do you manage your reflection without becoming critical?
Great question. I love these questions. Yeah, I think, you know, it's there's two ways to kind of look at it. I think that there's always an opportunity. So first of all, it's writing out, for me, writing out freely, no editing, you know, just writing without thinking about it, right?
Physically writing.
And, you know, the negative thoughts come up even about yourself, you know, about myself, and you think, okay, you know, I'm this, or I'm not good enough, or, you know, I should have done this better, I could have done this better. And then when you look at that, it's really just practicing this exercise. Okay, but what is the alternative to that? What is the upgrade to that, right? So if you're saying that, you know, hey, you know, I should have done this better. Well, you were doing the best you could with what you had, with what you knew at that time, you know? And so how can you have compassion for that person, you know, with the maybe limited information that you had at that time?
Right.
You know, sometimes we go back and we say, oh, if I would have known that, I would have done something differently. Well, at the time, you didn't know that.
Right.
So let's not be hard on ourselves because you were making the best decision that you could at that time. And so it allows you, I think, to have then more compassion for yourself and your process.
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes it can be very difficult to give yourself that break.
Yeah.
Especially if there's no proof in the pudding for it.
Totally.
We didn't win the game. We didn't, you know what I mean?
No, totally. And you're just going, striving. And it's like, where did we come up with these, you know, we're just wired in a way where it's like, if we're not number one, then, I mean, for me as a competitor, I'm like, if I'm not winning, I don't want second place.
Right.
Just, that doesn't mean anything to me. I'm going to be the, you know.
Right.
So
I can relate to that big time. That's one of the things I generally have to keep under my hat because sometimes my competitive nature puts people off. But it is one of those things, you know, and you said another hot button word, striving. When you're one of those people that is wired to strive and you hit these roadblocks where for a second, it doesn't matter how wired you are to do it or not. You just can't. Life has gone too topsy-turvy. We've made a left turn here. How do you manage those times when you want to strive harder at things, but you know it's just a matter of being patient?
The waiting. It's really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. Something that I've learned that I try to connect to and hold on to during those times is that there's no empty space. And so I think it allows me to be in that waiting a bit in terms of, hey, you think when nothing's happening, it's like, something needs to happen. I need to go do something. I need to go, like, I can't just sit here and do nothing.
Yes.
It's, like, not in my nature. Like,
right.
I'm, like, I need to, I'm a doer. I want to feel like I'm contributing to something. I want to feel like I can influence something, you know, whatever that may be. And when you literally are in a situation where either you don't have control over it, like, you really just have to surrender the control, or you, you know, are waiting, you know, for a resolution. You're waiting for a, you know, a breakthrough in something. You're waiting for that thing. Again, it's like, okay, what if there's no empty space? What if there's something in this waiting? How is that, you know, what is that building in me so that whenever that thing does come to pass or rises to the surface or you can now move forward, you're even all the more equipped, you know, to be able to do that because you waited well. And it's hard. I mean,
waiting well.
Yes. That's, I need to be schooled in waiting well.
Yeah.
But that's it, I think. And that's something that, you know, I try to just remind myself of these things. I get these glimpses, you know, I go back to things in the past that have happened where I've had to wait, or where, you know, you're just like, oh, something has to change or something has to change. And I can go back to those moments because I'm not there anymore. You know, I'm here now. And so it's like, okay, I made it through that thing. And now what can I take from that waiting, from that period that's, you know, that has equipped me now in building, you know, all the more, you know, strength, endurance, I'd like to call a word, internally for what's ahead now. But it's hard.
So you think it's just a matter of time and hindsight that can give you ownership over those times?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it's reflecting and realizing and kind of attaching a purposeful meaning to that time in the past, whatever that is. That helps me. It may not help, you know, it may not work for everybody, but I think what allows me to, you know, keep going and not see something as, you know, a waste or not see something as just like, hey, I never want to look at that thing again.
Right.
Well, there's a lot that, you know, has happened in each and every one of our lives that we might not want to, you know, ever want to go back and live in that time again. But we're here now. And how can, you know, how can we look at that in a way that's like, hey, that was building us.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of what I'm curious about, because there's a lot of people that could, or I shouldn't say a lot of people, I'm sure there's a fair amount of people out there that can look back on times in their lives like that. And they think it's either a damn the bad luck or I was a victim of circumstance. It sounds to me like you're able to take a little bit different view of that and to focus more on what role you might have played and what can be different going forward. How do you think you've been able to keep yourself from having feelings like, oh, Jenny got the spot on the team I was supposed to have and it's her fault? You know what I mean? The victimization of bad turns is too easy to do. So how do you avoid that?
So this might be a... I don't want to say how this might be maybe an unpopular response, but because it's hard. But I think, you know, when looking at that and even comparison is like, it's truly, I think
it's the thief of joy.
It's the thief of joy, right?
Yeah. Yes.
It truly is. But I think we're all subject to it. I think it's our human nature, right? We compare ourselves to that next person. I've compared myself to my teammates, you know, positively and negatively. Like, And we just do it because it's part of who we are. I don't think, you know, I mean, I don't know if anyone could raise their hand and say, I don't compare. I don't judge. I don't, like, come on, we're all human.
Yeah, well, I know that that's one of the exercises that a lot of people try to put themselves through. And that's why I brought up comparing you to you yesterday.
Yeah.
Because that's really the only way to fight that instinct we have.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I think something that has helped me, you know, is really just finding ways to celebrate one another. You know, I have a lot of friends, former teammates that have went on to play. They all played at big, you know, schools in college, but then played professionally in the league, you know, across different sports. Then I'm like, oh, you know, sometimes I'm watching a friend of mine played in the WNBA finals last night, a former teammate of mine.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I'm like sitting there watching, you know, sitting on the couch, another friend of mine's a top tennis player. And you're just like, oh, yes. Like, you know, and you're truly, genuinely happy for them. I love celebrating them. I love going to watch them play. Truly, it's amazing, and I love it. And then you also have those thoughts. You're like, oh, you know, we were on the same team, or like you start thinking about all those things yourself.
Inevitably,
and you're like, that could have been me. And then I think, oh, is it? Yeah, it's too late for me. I can't. You know, I'm like in my body. I'm like, no, that's far and gone. I'm not going to be able to go and compete at that level. But I think, you know, finding ways to celebrate one another, and then you can find a way to celebrate yourself in that as well, too. And I think that's been really helpful, you know, in just trying to combat some of the comparison, because, you know, it's a different experience. It's a different perspective when you're the one, you know, spectating and watching versus being the one out there and playing. And that's just it. It's a different perspective. It's a different type of experience. It doesn't mean one is more valuable than the other. You know,
is that something you were conscious of right away, or was there some before you got there?
Yeah, I think naturally, right? You grow to appreciate you grow to just appreciate everyone's unique journeys.
Right.
And that's something that is like, hey, you know, when we're younger and you think about, especially through high school, you know, when we're playing at these top tournaments and everything, and these are like your close people, your close friends. But there's, you know, there's a lot of, you're 16, 17, 18 years old. There's a lot of comparison in that, you know, and in a way you're almost like, you know, you want this person to do this, but you don't want them to do that. And then I need to be the one who's going to be, you know, rising the top. Well, it doesn't happen like that.
Right.
So how can we come to be like, okay, my journey is unique and different and amazing in its own ways. And so is, you know, my friend over here. And it just looks different, you know, but it doesn't mean that we can't empower and support one another and lift one another up. And I think today, now, we need that all the more, you know. So
why do you think that is?
Oh, come on. I think, you know, there's a lot of reasons why, I think. But, you know, there's so much division and there's so much like us versus them. And, you know, we all want to convince one another that our way is right. Or if you think the way that I think, then like, you know, the world's going to be better. And if you,
you're right,
it's we need more of this. We need more of conversations. We need to break down walls and barriers to one another. We need to ask more questions. You know, we need to just really seek to understand, you know. I think that, not to go back to this, but it's like, I really think that, you know, we judge the most what we understand the least. And how do we come to understand one another better? It's by, you know, sitting down. It's by asking questions. It's by learning about our unique stories and journeys. And then, you know, maybe we're a little bit less likely to judge that thing that we see on the surface because we have the context for it. And it makes sense why.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%, of course. I guess, what do you think are some of the things that contribute to people being so judgmental, for want of a better way of putting it, and siloing off into these echo chambers instead of wanting to have what essentially amounts to be an outward conversation that could be uncomfortable when we have a difference of opinion, not too dissimilar from the inward conversation you need to have with yourself when things are going to get uncomfortable to get a better understanding?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a big thing is it's, you know, our safety, like how we feel safe, right? It's more comforting. It feels more safe for me to just, you know, and I'm not saying me personally, but just in speaking about this topic where it's right. Like for each and every one of us, it's like, you know, we want to be around people who think the same way as we think, who vote the same way as we vote, who, you know, share the similar beliefs and values and everything, because it feels more safe to be there. And so we can just stay there. You know, and one thing that I have learned that I go back to as well is like your world could be as small as you want it or as big as you want it. And I try to keep that in mind. Again, that comes from my mentor, that I'm going to probably pull a lot of things from there, but it's true.
And
it's, you know, it's, I think it happens in our, you know, relationships as well, where it's like, hey, we can keep this, you know, it's important who you keep close and who you keep around.
Yeah.
But it's also important in, you know, how we expand, you know, expand ourselves and open our minds, you know, and things like that. And are we intentionally choosing situations, environments, and people that don't look like us, that don't talk like us, that don't do the things that we do? And are we trying to learn from them? And I think it's really important. That's how we become better. And that's how we really expand our capacities to really love one another. And I think we need that. We really do. Yeah. And we have so much to give. You know, I really believe there's you know, we have more in common than we think. And it's just a matter of finding those places of connection. But we can do it. You know, we just have to want to do it.
Yeah. You have to be open-minded to it. Like I tell a lot of people, this is not something I've said on camera, but like I tell a lot of people, when we first started doing the podcast, it was very much a way for me to expound on everyone's uniqueness and share everybody's infinitely small part of the universe. But after maybe 5 or 10 episodes, it really started to show the commonality amongst people who were radically different walks of life. So I'm glad that you bring that up, because it is something that is really the case whether or not we can be conscious of it. It's just a matter of being open-minded enough to notice it.
Totally. It's so good. And exactly. The space that you're creating here, and it's something that I was so excited. I'm so excited to be part of that here, just, you know, because of that, right? It's like, hey, it's people from all different backgrounds, different industries, different, you know, life situations, work situations, etc. But hey, you can find those places of commonality, and that, you know, you notice those things over time, and it's by having these conversations. So I really love that. Yeah.
So one of the things that has been a common theme amongst people, whether we're talking about rappers or microscope inventors, is Plan B and people's handling of or complete denial of Plan B. So talk to me about when you realized that you're not going to do athletics in a capacity you thought you did. Did you have a Plan B, or was this you were all in and now we're just going to make a new Plan A?
Well, the competitive person in me had to find the Plan B. If I wasn't playing, you know, basketball at that level, what am I going to do next? That was the big question that I had to ask myself. So what happened was I played for 2 years at a small school in the middle of Pennsylvania. I ended up, stopped playing, and I transferred and finished school at University of Pittsburgh. Well, when I was in that transfer process, it was like, I don't know what to do now, because this has been my whole life.
Right.
You know, growing up playing competitively and sacrificing and wanting to play in college and want to do this whole thing. You know, I didn't even know what to study in school, because I'm like, I'm playing basketball. Like, this is going to be my ticket. Like, I'm going to be pro. Like, I don't
know. You were all in.
I was all in, like, honestly. And that was just such the culture of just, you know, my teammate. Like, it's just what you embody. And you're like, school, okay, we'll go to class, but like, I'm playing basketball. So, you know, when I stopped playing and I went to Pitt, I got involved and I started coaching at the high school that I went to.
Oh, cool.
It was great to be involved in the sport, but it was really hard for me not to jump in and like scrimmage with the girls and do all that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because I'm like still, you know,
instinct
had
strong
in me to play. But beyond that, then, you know, I was looking for something that I could do to still have that, you know, not competitiveness per se, but just I needed it. Like, I realized how much basketball really, I have allowed that to define me in a lot of ways, where it's like, hey, this is how I relate to one another. People know me as an athlete. They know me as, you know, all these different things in the community, all around, revolving around sport.
Right.
That's how I relate to one another. So how am I going to relate to somebody if I strip that part away from me, you know?
Yeah,
and
now
I
are you just Ashley?
It. Yeah. So like, well, who wants to hang out with me now? Like, what, you know, and just like, that made me cool. So, so I got into a long distance running, which, you know, as a basketball player, we do short sprints. And that's our type of, like, you know, running in terms of practice.
Right.
Anytime coach is like, hey, we're going outside, we're running like a mile. Everyone's like, no, we don't do long distance running. No one wants to do that. And so then, funny enough, after, you know, I stopped playing, I decided to do these events. And I eventually, you know, the half marathon became my like yearly event that I would do.
Was this just a matter of you had to set up another peak to chase?
I think so. It was a lot of like, I got something to prove.
Yeah.
And then the question behind that's like, who do you got something to prove to?
You.
You know? Yeah. It's like, hey.
Doesn't matter. You could be on planet of one.
Exactly.
It's just you.
Exactly. It's just me. And that's so funny. It's so true, because at the end of the day, you know, you think that so many, you just, it's just you. it's just you. And then you sit with that question. You're like, all right, well, what do I have to prove? So anyways, though, I was, you know, I was doing this and I ran this event for several years. It kind of kickstarted my career into that space because I started then working for, you know, the event production company behind the Pittsburgh Marathon. And so I stayed, you know, in that world and everything. So I was doing running and, you know, that was my way of, you know, staying in the competitive landscape without, you know, saying that, oh yeah, I'm a competitor. I was still doing it, you know?
And still having, I imagine, that satisfaction of your mind controlling your body.
Oh, totally. Totally. And, you know, I would go out and I'd have my watch on every time and I'd make sure, okay, I'm hitting this time, I'm hitting that
yes.
time. And it's like, okay, you know, like, does it really matter? Yeah. Like, but that was it. And I, you know, one of the biggest things was like, I remember when I was running, I loved it, of course. But he asked that question, same thing with basketball. Do you love it? Or like, can you find the joy in it without tying it to a
metric of
without,
some kind?
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And I went down that whole journey. And what led me down that journey was in 2020, when COVID happened, I was training for my first ever full marathon. So I've only done the half marathons, and I was like, I'm going to go do a full marathon.
Of course.
Of course. And I got to my longest run, which was like 17 miles and, you know, the whole thing. And I'm like, yeah, this is the furthest I've ever run. And I'm training for the race, and it was in a couple months. And then, you know, everything was started to get canceled with COVID. And then inevitably the marathon got canceled. And I had those similar thoughts, remember, at the top of the conversation where it's like, I just did all this. Now, what is this for? Like, I did all this training. I sacrificed everything. And now I'm not even going to be able to cross the finish line. So what is all this for? So, it, you know, I had to learn to pivot. I had to learn to kind of go a little bit deeper and find, you know, okay, well, what did I learn out of, you know, these training, this last several months of training, and how could I still participate in this event? And maybe not in the way that I thought I would, but it turned to a virtual. So friends of mine and myself, we got together and we completed the race, the 26.2 miles, but each of us had a part in it.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
Yeah. So it's like, now I think back, we all did it collectively together. And that means so much to me because there are, you know, people in my life that I care about, and I was able to, you know, accomplish this and cross the finish line in a way, but doing it together. So it didn't look like how we thought it would. And sometimes, you know, it's for the better.
Right. Yeah. I mean, not everything's going to go according to plan, especially in 2020.
No.
So in that time, were you really setting up these things to create a way to keep competing against yourself?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of
I guess what I'm getting at is was continuing to do that stuff because the question of what do I do now hadn't been reconciled?
Yeah, and I think I had a hard time believing that I'm actually, you know, I don't know. You feel like you're not good enough unless you achieve this certain thing, unless I do that next thing that's better than the thing I did before. And you're just constantly, you know, just constantly kind of chasing that and having something to prove. And I think, you know, it's again, it's all these external things that we chase on, you know, on the outside of like,
right.
Hey, I have all these goals, and if I just do this thing, then it's going to make me this. Or, you know, you can break it down all the further. Like, you know, why do people have the goals that they do?
Right.
You know, why are we actually doing this thing? And that goes back to what if the goal isn't the goal? Like, because I think a lot of times there's always the goal that's underneath, you know, there's a goal that's underneath, right? It looks like, hey, I want to lose 10 pounds. But is that really the goal, to lose 10 pounds? Or is the goal to, you know, feel better about yourself? Is the goal to seek the approval or, you know, gain the approval of somebody else who
right.
thinks that, you know, and it kind of trickles down. So, yeah, there's a lot of that for me.
Yeah, it's one of those things where people can try to be motivated by those things, but motivation comes and goes.
Comes and goes.
Yeah.
comes and goes.
You can't really rely on motivation too much.
No.
So as you make the transition out of athletics and you're doing the marathon running and you get to COVID and now you're running one virtual, how does this start to transition away from this type of putting your trial by fire, putting your own feet to the fire? How do you start to give yourself some relief from that?
Yeah, you start, you know, I start to realize that there's actually so much more than I am so much more than just these things that I could achieve, you know, and thankfully I've had people come alongside me in that journey that's been really helpful to help me, you know, see parts of myself, you know, that are separate from, you know, the things I could achieve in sports or the, you know, the goals that I could go after. And you start to just realize, like, you know, going back to the, like, if, you know, oh, who am I? Who do I have to offer if I'm not playing basketball? It's like, you know, you allow yourself to just open up a bit more, you know, to people and friends and just really start to enjoy, you know, things, try new things. You know, that's something that has been huge for me, is stepping out of my comfort zone, you know, and exploring things that maybe I never thought that I otherwise would.
Because athletics was such a dominant part of your life?
Yes, where it's like, oh, I couldn't, there's no way that I could enjoy this thing in performing arts because that's not my world. My world's
gotcha.
In sport.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, my husband, Vlad, him and I did improv at FST.
That's
awesome. Yeah, and I'm like, okay, this is totally like, no way, this is not us, like, you know.
Yeah.
We're athletes. We're not in this world, like, you know. Everything. And we did it. And yeah, it just opens you up so much to, you know, a whole new world. And then you're able to see people in that craft and really appreciate what it is that they're doing, you know, and going to these shows and being able to see them in their respective, you know, elements and just, you know, cheer them on and celebrate them. And that kind of goes back to, you know, the same way we talk about with the teammates and things like that, is like being able to take a step back and look around and celebrate, you know, each and every one of us on our unique journeys and be able to see the value that they bring, you know, to others.
Right.
So.
And that's a hard thing to do when you're in a competitive bubble.
Yes. Yes.
So one of the things that I know about people, whether or not they're artists or athletes or people who are wildly dedicated to their craft, when they're forced to pivot for one reason or another, it becomes inevitably some kind of identity crisis.
Yes.
Do you find that you were competing against the identity crisis with open-mindedness?
Oh, wow.
Because it seems like you were able to flood a lot more into your life at a time when it could have been instinctual to wallow.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I think I think what happens is that, oh gosh, you know, I was just thinking about this recently of why I was thinking about what holds us back from trying something new.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that, and I even put a little, you know, survey out there out of curiosity on LinkedIn, and I was like, you know, what is that thing? The number one response was not knowing where to start, but that was followed by, you know, fear of failure and fear of, you know, what people are going to think. And so I'm bringing that up because I think about this question of, like, you know, sometimes when I am exploring something new or want to, you know, try this thing over here, or I went to, you know, pottery a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, what am I? Like, okay, I'm going to pottery now, I guess. But it's like, I mean, but I think it's being comfortable with realizing that, like, no, you don't have to stay in a box over here. And so you are kind of competing with that, in a way of, like, that kind of old identity that,
right,
that limits you and that says, hey, you are this. No, I'm so much more than that. And the things that I can come to, you know, like and explore and, you know, just appreciate and care about exists so far beyond, you know, what I've just constructed over here is this is who it is that I am and this is what I like and this is what I think. To go off of that, something that I've really been, you know, working through and giving myself, you know, permission is to really give myself permission to change my mind about something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's been a huge thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of people will talk to me about what kind of mentality kind of led you to holding on to things. I think we all do that.
Yes, yes. And that, I think, again, it goes back to, hey, this is what I know. There's comfort in the familiarity.
Yeah.
And there's, hey, if, you know, my friend here thinks the same way about this, or I'm around this group of people and they all kind of do things the same way, and this is just what we do. Well, this is just what we do. And there's something in that, you know, repetitiveness. There's something in the routine. There's something in, you know, the familiarity that keeps us there. And who's going to be the one, or who's going to be like, hey, you know what? I actually don't know if I think about this the same way that I used to, or I actually want to go try this thing over here. It may cost you some, you know,
comfortability.
Yeah. And it may cost, you know, you may have to answer some questions from people if they're like, oh, why do you want to do that now? And that's a big fear that we have. Like, what are people going to think about us if I say, hey, actually, I changed my mind about this thing?
Yeah, people got the attention span of dogs.
You know,
7 seconds later,
and
they'll forget.
Yeah, I mean, another thing, too, is like, hey, we focus a lot on what other people think about us. But I think, are people really spending their time thinking about us? No, we're thinking about ourselves. Like, it's not happening. You know,
it's all Janet Jackson. What have you done for me lately?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, right?
So we get kind of stuck in that hamster wheel a little bit. Well, they say that the comfort zone is where dreams go to die. So,
yes.
I mean, thankfully, you're not obsessed with pigeonholing yourself there. So talk to me about when you get outside your comfort zone and you start to decide to yourself you want to do a podcast.
Yes. I love this. So I started the podcast really out of this space, kind of going back to my story with basketball. It was from there where I was like, gosh, you know, and I went through this whole kind of journey of unpacking these beliefs about performance and achievement and needing to, you know, reach a certain level. And then when I kind of worked through that myself, I was like, all right, I want to have these conversations. I want to talk to, you know, I want to open up space and I want to bring people on and I want to, you know, give them space and allow their voices and stories to be heard, because I really believe that if I went through all of this kind of like internal processing with athletics and identity and who am I and I'm only as good as what I can do, someone else has to, you know, I'm not alone in that.
No, God, no.
So it was really my heart behind it is, hey, let's open up this space, you know, similar to you in so many ways, which I'm so thankful to be here. But, you know, it's creating this space where it's like, okay, can I pursue the process of this project and not attach any outcome goals to it? That was the challenge to myself where I was like, you know, that whole competitiveness, everything I do is like, well, what's the purpose? And for me, I would only see purpose in like an end goal of the thing.
That's what I was just going to ask. Okay, so when you're an athlete playing basketball, your goal is to win the tournament. And you're practicing with the idea of winning the tournament.
Yeah.
Not enjoying the practice.
Yeah.
When you're doing the long distance running, you're picturing crossing the finish line.
Yes.
You said when COVID hit, the part that was most deflating was, I'm not even going to get to cross the finish line.
Exactly.
Now.
I don't get this medal. Like, you know, it's like, that's what I'm doing this for.
Right. So at what point do you start to enjoy the walk more than the destination? Or are we still doing that battle?
No, we tap in and out. We tap in and out. We've gotten better.
Yeah.
One thing, like, you know, for just kind of as a real life example, is that I'll go out on runs now and I won't wear my watch. I'll go out and not listen to music. I'll go out and I'll do something that literally forces me to be in a situation that's uncomfortable, where it's like, now I got to look around. Now I got to look, you know, and appreciate the beauty that's outside.
Mm.
You know, when I had a PR goal a couple years ago, and I was actually running a race in Tampa, I was like, I'm going to do this in this, you know, I'm getting this sub-2 hour time and everything. And I did it, but I can't share details of what it is I saw around me in terms of the course.
Right.
And that makes me so sad, because I'm like, I did it, but I did it at what cost? I missed the event for the sake of achieving the goal. Now, I did it, and my goal was to do the PR. So it's like, whatever you do it for is ultimately going to be your, you know, it's ultimately going to be what you get. But it's asking that question of like, you know, what are you really doing it for? And can you be okay with that outcome? And yeah, I'm just kind of, I was going on a little side tangent on that, but yeah, in terms of, yeah, coming back to like the journey of it all, I think it's, you know, realizing that there's more possibilities in the process of what we're going through if we actually take the time to like to consider that when, you know, when we have these goals, when we have these pursuits, and not just look at the end thing.
Right.
So for the podcast, that's the big, you know, that's the heart behind it is going there. And that just spreads encouragement and inspiration to others to be like, oh, wow, like that was your goal, but this happened instead. And like, and what did that build within you, and how that's, again, to equip you for what's to come later.
Right. What are some of the difficulties and maybe some of the things that have made it easier for you to switch mentality like that, to switch from being everything's goal-oriented, I'm wearing my watch, to, you know, we have to appreciate the journey because that's where the power between us lies?
Yeah, I think it's really by the things that I've, you know, experienced, and I can go back and connect to and have hope that, hey, you know, I go back and I look at my journey and I look at things that didn't go the way that I planned. And I, okay, you know, I met my husband in college. We both were not trying to go to that school. He had a similar journey as mine in terms of, he had injuries and ended up going at a different school. I ended up going at a school I didn't want to go to, that whole thing. And that's where we met. And then like, and you come back to present day and you go back and I write all these things down. And I think that's been really powerful to go back into, you know, journal and look at those instances and periods of time where it's like, hey, you're in the middle of this, you know, really messy situation, or you're in the middle of a big decision, or you're in this waiting period, or you're in this thing. And then you get through it and you're out on the other side of it. And with that, I think it keeps my heart and my mind open now when I'm facing those situations, or I'm in the middle of a discernment process of what am I going, you know,
right,
this happens or that happens. And it's like, hey, go back and remember these moments and know that it may not unfold the way that you want, but maybe there's something in here that's actually going to be the thing, you know, that you need. And realizing, you know, my version of what I think is good is not always necessarily what's good for me.
You're right.
And that's hard to accept because you're
big
like,
time.
No, I want this. I know what I want and I want this thing. But, you know, can we be open to the possibility, you know, can we be open to other possibilities?
Well, things happen on the way to the grocery store, they say.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you've had all of these things where you've set goals and the goals have deviated, or even when you've achieved the goals, there's been sidebar goals or ancillary goals that ended up being more beneficial or more impactful just because you didn't see them coming. How do you handle goal setting now?
That's a great question. You know, I like goals. I do like goals, and I think that they have a purpose, you know, and I like to be able to connect where it is that I am now and the thing that I'm going after. Okay, and how can I get there?
Right.
And I think goals serve a good purpose, right? But, you know, the way that I see them now is I don't want to allow the goal to create a limitation on myself, in which that has happened before.
How do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I love talking about this. I'm so glad you asked. So I think, okay, going back to, I like to use this example. You know, I have a bit of a background in personal training and coaching and fit in, you know, in gyms and in that kind of world. And, you know, when I work with clients, oftentimes what I hear in terms of their goals is like, you know, we go to weight loss, right?
Right.
Hey, I want to lose, let's just say we'll go to 10 pounds again, like we talked earlier. So I want to lose 10 pounds. Okay, well, why do you want to lose 10 pounds? Okay, well, I have this event coming up, or this is going on, or like, I really don't like this in my arms. It's always something that's just self, you know, critical.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal is 10 pounds. Okay, well, you know, let's say we reach that goal. Then is that all, you know, is that all you're going, like, Is that all you're doing it for? Is that all you're going to get? You know, what about in that process, the muscle that you're building, the confidence that you're building, all of these other things that are happening, but yet we're so focused on just that number, you know, on the scale. And if I hit that number goal, then I'm good. And it's like, I think it's a limitation that we put on ourselves. So that's all you're going to get? You know, I like to talk about the 9 out of 10, this whole concept I have around rating systems. And, you know, if something is really good, let's say there's a piece of cake and it's, you know, really good cake. You're like, oh, that's a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
So my version of that is if something is really, really good, that would be a 9, that would be a 10 out of 10. It gets a 9. And the reason it gets a 9 is because, and it's all kind of metaphorically,
you know? Yeah, of course.
It creates the space. It creates the space for, you know, something more, right? Another possibility in that, right? So if you say, oh, I go to this event and it was a 10 out of 10. Well, dang, so you're saying that's as good as it's going to get?
That's an interesting way to frame it.
So if it's a 9 out of 10, you're like, it was really, really good. But again, it's a mindset where it leaves that space for more discovery. And again, that goes into like, okay, what else could I take from that event? That's not just like the really good music or the, you know, whatever.
But the crux to that one is, how do you not take the gap between 9 and 10 and not translate that into dissatisfaction or something that you're accountable to?
Yeah. Well, it's how you look at it.
I mean, you didn't,
you
know, bake the cake.
No.
But, you know, if you go out and say to yourself, I did a 9 out of 10 today because you want to know you got more to give.
Yeah.
This makes perfect sense. But the other side to that sort, the other edge to that sort is, I'm dissatisfied this wasn't a 10.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because then you may fall into that, I need to strive harder and need
You're
to
right.
do more.
You're right.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, again, it's, I think the purpose of it, it goes back to, and maybe you need to, you know, ask yourself, well, why do I need to do more? Again, I think it's just the space for, you know, that internal kind of conversation and that discovery. And depending on, you know, you don't want it to be something where you end up being super critical of it and kind of go down that path. But can you see the possibilities in it in a way where, or can it show you something, or you know, can you discover something about yourself, learn something new about yourself in that, you know? And so it just, it's the space, I think, for discovery. And there's a choice in that and how, you know, which direction you're going to go.
Right. So when you find yourself at those moments where you can either say you're sad your dog died or you're lucky you had the dog, what are some of the things you do that keep you pushing towards this way so you can keep moving forward in a productive way?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's for me, the people that are alongside me, these relationships, the close relationships that I have, that I know that I can call and that are there and that are supportive, that I think in these moments is like, for me, what it is I need, you know, to be able to keep going and call. And it's like just knowing that I have that space, right?
Right.
And so having those people in your life is so important, because you know that, hey, at the worst of times, and, you know, I want to bring this up too, because I saw Simon Sinek talking about this, where it's like those people in your life where we normally call people during these worst, you know, these worst times. But what about the ones that like, hey, you did something really awesome, and like call them and celebrate that with them as well. And I think that's
right.
Really important too, where it's like, it's both. And it's not just like, I'm only going to call you whenever I'm really, really sad, or I need like this emotional support. It's like,
right.
I'm also going to call you, and I know you're going to celebrate that this moment with me too. So it's having those people that, for me, it's like, okay, I want to stay on this side of things, and I know I can't do it alone. And so can I, and I think it takes courage to ask for help.
Oh yeah.
And I don't like to ask for help. I like to, I like to think I can do everything on my own. And like, I don't need, now I can just do it. Like, I'll just do it. But I mean, I've come a long way with that, and asking for help has been the biggest gift that I could give to myself is doing that.
Did you
and receiving it from others?
Right. Because that's part B.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, asking is the first step, but actually receiving others' help is like, okay, like, you need to do, like, all, like, okay, you know, I'm trying to control what that looks like, but just receive it. Just receive it, you know?
I've definitely had people like that in my life for sure, and I'm sure I've been that guy at points, too. Did you see your reluctance to even ask for help as something that you had to, like, swallow as your own sign of weakness?
Yes. Yes.
How did you get to the point where... I'm assuming you did get to the point where you can realize that that isn't the case.
A conversation with a friend of mine who, it was one of those tough love conversations, and I was going through a really difficult time, and this was several years ago, and she had said to me on the phone, you know, you're always just complaining about all these things that are going on. You're always just kind of like talking about, like, you know, it's just like really negative. And I was kind of like, ow. Like, no, yeah, kidding. That's what you're there for. Like,
right between the eyes.
Yeah.
Eh?
Like, you know, you're my friend. You're supposed to get the negative. No. But, you know, we had a conversation and it was that moment where it was that tough love kind of moment where it was like, hey, asking for help, it's not a sign of weakness. You know, it's not. It's like,
no.
It's just not, you know, and people, what I've learned is that people are there and people do want to help and people do care about you and want to come alongside you in your journey. And that has made all the difference for me. And to follow up on that, kind of talking about that, you know, step two of that is really receiving it, is allowing people in and allowing people to, you know, show up for you in those ways. And that for me, it's reciprocal, you know, and knowing that, hey, like in friendship and relationship, it's like, let's show up for one another. Let's be there for one another and know that, hey, you're not alone in the thing that, you know, in what you go through. It looks different for each and every one of us. But, you know, it's you know, challenges and hardship comes for all of us.
Right.
And, you know, and the same thing, another big thing is support. Support looks different for each and every one of us. And so that question, I think, is important to ask, you know, what does support look like for you? And being willing to ask that question and then be able to, you know, openly share that with someone else and say, hey, support actually just looks like you being on the other side of the phone and just giving me the space. Or maybe it's like, hey, come sit with me and let's, you know, eat a pizza or something.
Right.
You know, it looks different. But understanding that it's like, this is how we go through these things together. This is how we get through it. And this is how we come out on the other side. And that's how ultimately we keep going.
Agreed. 100%. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges that we face when we're trying to support each other, but we are all going through it in one way, shape, or form? Even when you've got your silver spoon, you've still got your issues too.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest challenges is not knowing our own capacity and not honoring that. And I say that by, you know, we don't want to be overwhelmed. You know, we have something that we're going through. Being honest with ourselves and being honest with others is so important, I think, especially when, hey, I'm struggling, you're struggling, this person over here is struggling. How can we all, you know?
But that's such the scary, slippery slope.
Yeah.
Because that's when you got, you know, I mean, David Goggins once, one of his favorite quotes is, everyone's fucked up. Some people just do a better job of hiding it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's how you get comfortable not hiding it.
Yeah, it's hard, you know, and we don't want to show. For me, it's like, hey, you know, I've gotten really good at being able to, for the sake of a situation, come in and be like, yeah, like, what's up? Like, what's going on? You know, everything's good. Everything's great. And I go home and I'm crying. And I'm like, wow, why do I do this to myself? You know, I'm out here just like for the sake of the situation. It's like, it doesn't have to be like that. But yeah, it's being in tune, I think. It's hard. I don't know. It's hard. You know, I struggle with that. It's a great question because it's something that, you know, I struggle with.
I think everybody does.
Yeah, we
to
all
some
do.
Degree. Yeah.
We all do for sure. And I think that question about what support looks like has been helpful for me because sometimes you feel helpless. And as a helper, you want to be able to step in. You want to be able to show, like, hey, I care. But, you know, you may do something and that might not be, you know, what that other person actually needs. And maybe they're not fully you know, you might misread it. You might think they need this, but they actually need this. So we got to communicate. And it's hard because oftentimes you're like, no, I'm fine. You know,
right.
Like, and it's like, am I? how am I really doing? You know, it's a loaded question, but yeah, it's hard. What do you think?
Well, it's one of those questions that I find incredibly powerful, and I do like to see how people react to it. Just as an aside, I don't know if this came up when we first met, but I'm visually impaired. I grew up with a visual impairment, so I'm used to literally and figuratively having to see things different ways and being judged right out of the gate and having to try to find my back door in. So there was no way for me to hide the fact that I couldn't see. I can't drive. I don't see colors. You know what I mean? So my warts were incredibly difficult to hide. So I just got in the habit of letting everybody see my warts so someone could tell me what the fuck the board said.
Yeah.
So I'm always very curious to how people handle that, because I know that's a huge hurdle. And the irony to that hurdle is all the space you're talking about and all the personal freedom to grow is on the other side of that.
Yeah.
So it's how you get to the point where you can look in the mirror and say, you know what, there is some shit that's messed up about me, but
yeah,
I've got all these other positive things we can go forward with.
Yeah.
Even if I can't play basketball, even if I can't see.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, well, thank you for sharing that too. I don't think we didn't talk about that when we first met. But wow, I really appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, I think it's, gosh, I don't know. I'm losing my train of thought now, Eric.
We're all more powerful than we think, ultimately.
Yeah, we are. And what I wanted to say to your point about, like, hey, there is all this that's going on with, you know, can we just show it? I think,
right.
Yeah, it's, also allowing people to be able to speak into the parts of you that really bring out, that highlight the good things about you, the things they love about you, the things that they see in you, that they believe in you in. That has been everything for me, because the self-critic comes in, you doubt yourself. You think, I have all this that's going on, and like all this is super messy happening here. And like, you know, I don't want to show any of that. And
yes,
if you know this about me, then you're not going to want to be part of me, because that means all of these things. And there's the rejection component and everything.
Yes.
But allowing people to speak into your life and receiving that. And as silly as this sounds, I keep that stuff. I keep cards. I keep, you know, encouragement that people have shared with me when I've transitioned jobs, former colleagues of mine, friends of mine, when I started the podcast, the feedback of like, hey, this is amazing. Like, keep doing this, like all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, cool. But like, the guests are amazing. It's not me, you know,
exactly.
Like, you try to push that away and they're like, no, like, you know, and they're so encouraging. And it's like, why don't I care more about that than, you know, maybe that one negative thing or that thought of those things? So yeah, it's just really receiving that allowing people to you know, speak that into your life, and then also just receiving it, because I think that helps then, and it allows you to be, I think, a bit more vulnerable about the things that you are going through. Like, hey, this is, you know, this is me. And it's like, people want all of you, you know, like, I know that with people who I meet and who I, you know, I'm friends with. And it's like, no, I want to see that, you
right.
know, I actually love all of this about you, not just, you know, the you that is, you know, I don't know.
The Instagram us.
The Instagram you,
for lack of a
doing
better
really
way.
Cool stuff. Yeah, it's like,
we're not just a highlight reel.
We know. So we're so much more. And that's what makes us beautiful people, you
yes.
know?
So,
Amen. It's really good stuff.
So I like to get you out of here on something fun, but I'm going to ask you something, sidebar first. What is the most surprising thing that you've learned or experienced whilst doing the podcast?
Oh, wow. There's a lot of things.
I imagine.
Yeah. You know, I never imagined that I would connect with, like, strangers from other, honestly.
Yeah.
And being able to do that was really surprising to me. Not just that, but being able to connect with those people. Not that I didn't believe that that was possible, but it was surprising to me in some ways, where just opening up this space, creating this, you know, platform, this channel in a way for these conversations, how it could really evolve into real friendship.
Yes.
And that has happened. And I'm like, that is so cool because I never imagined that. You know, it's like, hey, we're gonna see where this goes. And that's the endless possibilities in the process. And that's like, hey, you know, I don't know where it's gonna go or how it's gonna go, but we're gonna show up to the space and we're gonna see what happens. And I've been able to connect with people across all, you know, walks of life, backgrounds, states, countries,
yes,
et cetera.
Yes.
And I call them my friends now.
Yes.
And I'm like, this is so cool.
Well, I hate to tell you, now that you've been a guest, you are Kay, yeah, the family.
Yes.
We do.
This is, yeah, it's so awesome to be here.
We call our guests family, and then at least once a year we do a family jam.
Oh, I love that.
And we bring everybody together.
Yes.
So now let's get you out of here on something fun. If you could have one of these conversations with someone now that you've been able to experience being able to open up and connect to different people from different walks, who would you love to have on your podcast? Dream guest, live, dead, I don't care.
Dream guest, Alicia Keys.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. I love her as an artist. I think, she's just, I would love to.
I didn't see that coming.
I know, right? Surprise.
Yeah.
Surprise. But yeah, Alicia Keys.
Very cool.
Yeah.
She's got an excellent ethos too. That,
yeah,
kind of,
I just like, I'm like, ah, oh, I feel that, you know, when she's sharing something, even in her voice, and just seeing just such a powerful voice. And I think it'd be really interesting conversation.
Definitely a good one for empowering people.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Ashley, I can't tell you how grateful we are that you came down and shared. You're always welcome back here. You're Kay the family, like I said. And I look forward to coming on your show and doing the reverse order, too.
Yes, definitely. So. I can't wait for that. We got a scheduling and make
awesome.
It happen.
Awesome.
It won't be as legit as this whole setup in here. But hey,
it's legit.
It is what it is.
Yeah, when you can have an honest conversation, it's legit no matter where
exactly.
you put.
It's about the conversation.
Amen.
So it's about the conversation. Thank you so much, Eric, for having me. Again, this has been amazing to be here and to share this space with you. And I love what you're doing and how you are, you know, allowing others to come on and to, you know, let their voices be heard, stories be shared. And it really, the impact goes far beyond, you know. And I feel really honored to be here. So thank you.
Awesome. We're so grateful. Likewise,
thank
Ashley.
You.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm fired up after that one.
Yeah.